Hello, welcome again to another of our Creative Confidence series. I'm very excited for today. I have Jen Massaro with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Jen is not only an IDOU learner, she's an expert storyteller. And today we're going to talk a little bit about some adventures she's had, both in sailing for 2 years, across the Atlantic and all over many different exciting places, and then how she's turned that into a really powerful story for influence and helping other people to think about their lives differently. Yeah. So thank you for joining
thank
us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about just who you are, what you do for a living, what your life is about.
Well, I like to think of myself as actually a storyteller because I'm in public relations and communications, and I currently work at Cisco. I've been doing communications for more than 20 years at PR agencies, at smaller companies, mainly in California. And I sort of think that it's a storytelling is sort of like a muscle that you need to exercise. Like, it's not like riding a bike and you can just get on. You need to be constantly thinking about it in order to think about what is a story. And I feel like I talk about it a lot at work to train to tell other people what a good story, like to pitch the media, is. Because I'm partly in sales because I'm trying to pitch and tell the story of Cisco to people who will write about it, but it has to be a good story. And so that's how I got introduced to IDEO.
Nice, wonderful. And so as you're doing work in PR and you were thinking of ways to exercise your storytelling muscle.
Yeah.
How did you come in touch with IDOU? How did you even find out about it?
Well, actually, it was a course that was offered through Cisco and to select a group of people. And I wanted to take it again just to exercise those muscles. And I had been in the process of telling my story about sailing around the world, and I thought it would be a fun way to kind of hone that story, because I had been giving presentations about our sailing trip to a number of different groups, to sailors, to non-sailors, to people at work who are interested in about it. And so I sort of went on this journey of taking that story and refining it through the course. And it was really good muscle building.
Yeah. Nice. Amazing. Well, so before we dive, today we want to spend a lot of time thinking about your story and hearing about how your story evolved and how you really honed it over mm-hmm. time, like culminating in doing a TEDx talk, which is a really, really fantastic talk. And we'll share out that link to everyone. But, before that, I just want to talk to you a little bit about, how you even came to doing this trip. How did this trip enter your life?
Well, I'm not a sailor. I mean, I didn't grow up sailing, and I met my husband, who was a sailor in college, and he was on the sailing team, and he told me, someday I'm going to go sailing around the world. And I used to just think, whatever. Like, a lot of people say a lot of things, you know? And so years pass, and as we explained actually in the TEDx talk, you know, my husband was like, we need to put a stake in the ground. So we ended up buying a boat and sort of started sailing a little bit more. And then we bought a bigger boat and actually started actively planning for it. And I think I loved my husband more than I was afraid, because I was definitely afraid of going on this trip. But it was like the planning that we did just built on itself. You know, 5 years out, we started getting really into the planning and you know, doing little things like, how are we going to homeschool our son? Who will take care of our house if we have renters in it? All those little things. And then it sort of builds on itself. And all of a sudden, you know, the date approaches where we're actually going to be shoving off, and you do it. Sometimes even if you don't feel ready for something, you just do it. In fact, I don't think if you're doing something big, I don't think anybody ever feels ready for it. And that's part of like the evolution of the story that I got to eventually too, was, how can I take the experience that I had and make other people relate to it as well?
Hmm. Very cool. I think this is a lot of fun, and I'm really excited to share a lot of the aspects of your story and your own personal process of this unfolding. But before we do that, we're going to play a little game. So one of the things that we know inside of our storytelling course is that we teach a lesson about the big idea, honing the big idea, you know, that storytelling is a process of editing. It's not additive. You're not just adding on more layers. We were talking about this a bit this morning, that you have to hone your story and you're constantly taking away pieces of it. And so when we think about this big idea, we know that a lot of people struggle when they're trying to hone their own story. what is that big idea and how do you find it over time? So what we wanted to do is with a little bit that you all know right now about Jen and her story of sailing around the world, we're going to post up a little poll with a couple of big ideas, and we're going to have you guys try to guess what the big idea is. The options we have for you are top things you can learn about sailing around the world. Do you think her big idea was about, it's not about conquering your fears, but confronting them? Another one is about staying sane around the world while sailing with your family. When sailing around the world, always bring a backup sail. And sailors make plans in the sand at low tide. And the last option for you is sailing around the world is not equivalent to vacation. I'm just going to have Jen talk us through like a high level of where you went.
Yeah. So I had a 2-year leave of absence from Cisco. So that was our time frame. So whatever we had to do had to fit, at least for me, within those 2 years. And we started from San Francisco, sailed out under the gate and went south. And we cruised down the coast of California, Mexico, down to Panama eventually, and through the Panama Canal, and then across the Caribbean to mostly the Greater Antilles, which are, you know, we went from the San Blas Islands off the coast of Panama to Jamaica and Puerto Rico and the Spanish Virgin Islands. And then you have to think about weather. So we had to be above a certain latitude by June for hurricane season. So we made our way to the Bahamas, all the way up the east coast of the United States, kind of going in and out of the intercoastal waterway and the Atlantic, made it to Cape Cod. And from there, we crossed the Atlantic during hurricane season. We stopped in the Azores, and it was a 16-day passage. That was our longest passage from Cape Cod to the Azores. And then from the Azores to Lisbon, which was another 9 days, and then followed the coast all the way around through the Mediterranean. So we went through Straits of Gibraltar, up around Spain, France, all the way down the coast of Italy to Sicily, back around to Italy, to Greece, back around again across the Mediterranean. And then my son and I, we left my husband in Palma de Mallorca on Balearic Islands so that I could go back to work. And he sailed another 5,000 nautical miles back home, or actually to Florida. We put the boat on a truck.
Wow.
Total, we had about 100, at least the part of the trip that I was on, 100 overnight passages. So that's about one night every week where one of us is on watch the entire night. So we would do 3 hours on and 3 hours off. And we sailed faster than any other cruising family or couple that we met along the way.
Amazing.
I wouldn't necessarily recommend going that fast, but we did see a lot.
Wow. I think that is absolutely fascinating. So I'm positively drooling here now as a traveler and a sailor about thinking about all of these places. But one of the things I really love about your story is that it's not what I would have expected. You know, I remember when we were thinking and looking at for great learners and great people doing amazing things inside of our courses, and your name came up, and I started like reading your blog posts and looking at your assignments and watching your TED Talk. I was marveling at what you pulled out of this story. And
yeah.
So one of the things I think is really interesting is how this trip changed you.
Yeah.
And I'd love for you just to share a little bit about how much in your life changed after doing this or during doing this trip.
Yeah, I think because I got outside my comfort zone so much, when you do that, you realize what you can do. And that gave me more confidence. I don't think I realized how little confidence I had before until I realized what I could do. And so it's interesting. At Cisco, they have these work style profiles, and it measures you in different things. And my profile before leaving on the trip was dominated by the need to verify things. Like, is this okay? Are we doing this the right way? You know, does everybody on the same page? And then I asked to take that personality profile or work style profile again when I came back. And they told me that the philosophy was that people don't really change. I just kind of want to see, because I feel like I did change. And it changed to why I'm more dominated by improvisation and adaptability, basically. And which makes sense, because when you are sailing for 2 years, you're not that you're at the mercy of the weather, but you're constantly taking it into account. And you can make a plan, but it the weather is going to dictate whether or not you can execute on that plan. And you have to have a plan B, C, D, E. And if you do, and then you go through that list and you may end up making up a plan Z at the end because you have to, because you can't. That's how sailors will get into troubles. They'll say, I need to leave on this date, and they ignore all the weather. So, and it enabled me to come back to work with a lot more confidence. Things I'm doing now that I don't know, that I don't think twice about, that I don't know if I would have done before the trip.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the biggest things that we often talk about with storytelling, with making, with ideation, with gathering insights and empathy is building that confidence.
Yeah.
And so I love your story because it's just so, it's such a journey of chipping away at different things you realize and reflect on about yourself and building new capabilities and new skills.
Yeah.
And so I think like this story of learning how to navigate ambiguity is one of the big things that we're always talking about. There's nothing more about navigating ambiguity than sailing.
Yeah, because every anchorage that we went to is new. I mean, every grocery store that we went to is new. And you get used to it. Like your mind, there's new studies that are coming out that talk about, I mean, like the plasticity and elasticity of your mind and your brain. And you can learn things when you get older, and particularly if you're doing them repetitively. So the more that you can get yourself outside your comfort zone, the better.
Wow. Yeah. And so when you were out on this trip, and then you came back. So you came back and all of a sudden, I'm sure thousands of people were asking you, or hundreds of people were saying, how was your trip?
Yeah, yeah.
What was it in you that made you want to start sharing your story? Why were you motivated to do it?
Well, in part, it was the request. So I got back to work and everything. I'd really like to see like a slideshow of what you did. So my first thought was, I'll make a slideshow just to show some of the pictures and show, but I'll let me relate it to work and I'll do lessons learned. And I think a lot of people, when we got back from the trip, a lot of people thought that we'd been on this 2-year vacation, that we were sipping cocktails in the cockpit and just in the bikini the whole time. And I think to be fair, I mean, that's the story that we showed on Facebook, you know, that was like, we got to this great location and let's look at this beautiful view from the anchorage. And I didn't talk as much about the hard stuff, whether it was the difficult things, you know, homeschooling on a boat is really hard, you know? And I really, you know, struggled with fear tremendously. And so, I started doing these lessons, but it felt a little, like shallow. I think the lessons that we were sharing, they're kind of fun little lessons that you might, you know, flip through in an article or something like that. And so that's when I started, I had the opportunity to take the IDEO course and I was able to start honing it a little bit more because I wanted to make it available to a broader audience, not just sailors or not just like a slideshow at work. Like what was that bigger story? So that's when I started going on that journey too.
Yeah. And how did you start to figure out, like, so you started off with this like 10 big things I learned was one of the ideas and the frameworks that you moved to.
Yeah.
So then how did you evolve to figure out what it actually was for your TED Talk?
Well, so when I started the course, I thought, well, I'll be honest. I thought that my story was pretty good actually at the beginning. And then it was through the feedback that I got and some of the lessons that I learned in the courses that made me realize that I was missing a couple things. Because when I would go and give presentations, everybody, you know, they liked them and they thought it was good. But then I started realizing that it was a little shallow. Like it was more about me. And then if you're telling a story that people are going to relate to, they need to be able to relate to it. And if it's about me, I'm not sure if they're going to relate to it as much. And so I started honing in a little bit more on this fear thing and courage and what does courage really mean? And what are you afraid of? And the feedback that I was getting from the folks, not only from the instructor in the course and my peers at Cisco, but from the other cool thing about the course is you get feedback from everywhere. that was really neat. And so I had said to myself, you know, they asked you to identify goals. And I said, oh, I'd like to do a TEDx talk someday, which prompted me to start looking into what local TEDx events were going to be coming up. And as I started to hone that story, took that story and pitched it to a TEDx event and got to be able to do it. And the story that I started honing in more was what is, you know, the fear that I dealt with and my realization about courage and what it really means.
And when you're, I mean, you're going to something that's deep inside of you, like I can see your body changing and and when you're talking about something like that, that's so deep inside of you, what does that feel like as you're uncovering those layers of yourself and trying to like then share it out to a group of people you may not even have ever met all of them before?
It feels cathartic in a way, because I hadn't been talking about the fear ahead of time. And I feel that that's what people can relate to. Everybody has something that they're afraid of. And I think that people were looking at me taking a trip, like, you know, sailing halfway around the world and crossing the Atlantic, as if like I could do that, but they couldn't. And by me sharing a story of saying how, no, I was totally petrified and I had to deal with it, but I was prouder of myself than dealing with it, for dealing with it, then what can you do in your life that you might be afraid of? Including public speaking, yeah. You know, wanting to do a TEDx, there's also fear of, you know, public speaking. Jerry Seinfeld used to do this comedy routine of how, you know, people's number one fear is public speaking. Number two is death. So that if you're at a funeral, you'd rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy. that seems crazy, right? But that's very much tied into the story that, which is like, you know, what's the difference between dangerous and uncomfortable? It's uncomfortable to be at the podium giving a presentation. Mm-hmm. It's not dangerous, right?
Yeah.
And so that those fears that we have inside of ourselves, you know, if I can face this tremendous fear that I had of, you know, I was scared of everything on this trip, but I did it. You know, what are you afraid of? That whether it's public speaking, whether it's asking for a raise, whether it's, you know, asking someone out on a date, anything. You know, ask yourself, is it uncomfortable or is it just a little dangerous? If it's just a little comfortable, expand your circle of comfort, get a little uncomfortable, and you'll be proud of yourself for doing it.
Yeah, I think that is just so beautiful. And I think so many times when people are starting to tell a story, whether it's a business story or a personal story, it is all about them, all about that thing. And
yeah.
So I think you've really helped for us to highlight this shift about what is that larger circle? What's the larger story about? And then how do you empathize with others and bring them into it so that they can truly deeply connect with it.
That feedback was really helpful in the course, mm-hmm. Of people like telling me, asking me questions and making me think more critically about the story I was trying to tell. And a light bulb for me was about empathy, mm-hmm. and learning to have empathy for the audience and getting the audience to have empathy for you. You know, and that really helped me narrow down what the main theme of the story would be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the things we've also talked about a little bit is how that empathy for your audience, understanding who your audience is, and how then your big idea might subtly shift.
Yeah.
So I'd just love for you to share this. So the same experience, 2 years of sailing around the world with your family, you've shared it in a bunch of different contexts.
Yeah.
So what are some of the different ways that you've shared it beyond this big idea?
Being in PR, I sort of think of like, what is a story? What's different stories for different audiences? So I actually listen to a lot of podcasts. And so I pitched a tremendous experience that we had when we were crossing the Atlantic, where we were visited by about 50 Rizzo's dolphins for maybe about 6 hours or so. And it was this amazing experience, and we can hear them underneath in the boat, you know, singing to each other. And I listened to this podcast called Human Nature, and they talk about when humans get connected with nature. So I pitched them on that one particular small little story, you know, like what is it like to be in the middle of the Atlantic, with no one else, you know, we haven't seen anyone for days, more than a week. What is it like to be just visited by these creatures and having that connection with them? So I thought, so they love that story, and that will be actually coming out in the fall. I pitched another podcast about a sailing podcast about how, there's a guy who does this podcast called 59 North Sailing, where he interviews all these famous sailors. And they taught, and part of the reason they want to do this podcast, they want to get people out there more sailing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I started thinking, you know, a lot of people might be thinking how I was thinking, or how people in my audience might think, that those people are just extraordinary. They can do that, right? So I pitched them on, why don't you interview us as ordinary people who were scared and had never done this before, and beyond. And so he loved that idea. So I think, there's a lot of offshoots. You can have a main big idea, but depending on who your audience is, you can have a lot of different little stories. within a larger story.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you started sharing, you moved through different mediums as well.
Yes.
So I know, can you talk a little bit about how your format evolved? I can see some questions in here about technology and stories.
Okay.
So I'd love for you to share a bit about that.
Well, I mean, I started off, you know, at Cisco, I think people can't talk unless we use PowerPoint. So I definitely used PowerPoint at the beginning, where I had a PowerPoint presentation and I tried to make it as simple as possible, where I had a picture and a fragment of a sentence about the lessons learned. And then I had sort of a slideshow with all the pictures. Then I moved into, on the IDEO course, I went through and I did a blog, sort of mirroring that that presentation, the top things that I learned. And then I wrote an article on LinkedIn, where I was trying to narrow down, where I was getting all that feedback on what's the big idea of your story, how do you create empathy. So I wrote an article on LinkedIn where it was more appealing to the audience, like, what are you afraid of? And if I could do something, so can you. And then by that time we had pitched TEDx and gotten accepted. And then we went, oh no, now we have to create this. And so my husband and I did it jointly, and there are a lot of things we wanted to say, and we ended up having to narrow it down, because 18 minutes is not a long time to give a presentation. And so we mapped out everything we wanted to say, and then cut and cut and cut and cut and cut more until we had, it was a skeleton of what we originally started out with. So those are the different mediums. And then we've done now radio. So we'll be in a couple podcasts as well.
Wow. So cool. And so I know we've talked a lot, and we talk a lot in the course, and I think this is something that we practice a lot at IDEO, is rehearsal.
Yeah.
You know, so really practicing your story, telling it so many times until it is practically memorized.
Yeah.
And then you can humanize it. And so I'm curious, like, I know you are still a rehearser and a practicer, but.
Well, for certain things, like I can come into certain situations where I feel like I can be more extemporaneous. But if for TEDx, I felt like we needed to have this down. You know, you've got a time limit, you needed to get through a specific story. And so after we got the story down, we practiced. To the point where my son said that if he heard this again, he was going to puke. And I felt the same way too. But on the other hand, we needed to, you know, in that venue, in that format, in that particular situation, it needed to be completely rehearsed and practiced. And so I don't know how many times we ended up, once we had the full script, I don't know, 50 times. I mean, to the point where I knew exactly what I was going to say, and then could, so memorized, I could actually say it in a more genuine way.
Yeah.
And we did have, we didn't know that we were going to have this, but there was a teleprompter up front. So I suppose we could have read off the teleprompter, but it wouldn't have felt the same way. And so we just used the teleprompter to know what was showing on the slides behind us.
Yeah. Yeah. So nice. A fabulous sailing story. You found the hook, you found the big idea. How does this relate now back to your work in PR, where you're talking about deeply technological things and products and services?
Yeah. Well, I think that was one of the things I wanted to accomplish through the course. Even though it was going to be a personal story that I was telling in the course, it's those muscles, I think, that I wanted to exercise and get and do something that I feel like I could get a good story out of, and then leverage that practice for telling other stories. And I think it's humanizing of a story. It's not necessarily about the technologies, but the people behind the technology. You know, all stories have to have some tension or drama. And what I tell people at Cisco, especially when we're doing media training, is, you know, a lot of people, when they want to tell their own story at a company, they want to think of themselves as like the sun in the center of the solar system. Like, it's the stories about us. But that's not necessarily an interesting story. And if you were to read a story about another company, it was all just how great they are and how wonderful they are, you probably wouldn't like it either. All stories, so I talk to people about, like, how do we make the idea or the theme or the trend be that sun in the center of the solar system, and what's our role in orbiting around that, or around that trend. And there's always a little bit of tension and drama. Like, sometimes we as companies don't like to talk about the troubles that we went through to get to the good spot that we're at now, but that's what people learn from, and that's what's interesting to people. And I think that's similar to my story, which is, you know, I went through a lot of the word that came to mind was trauma, but it wasn't trauma. It was just, you know, trials of dealing with fear in difficult situations like storms and running aground and hurricane force winds and a lot of the things that we have to, or crossing the Atlantic, these things we had to deal with. And it wasn't about necessarily the technology on the boat or the boat itself. It was about the people on the boat. And that's the same thing, I think, at companies. Like, what are the stories of the people that can help tell your company story?
Yeah, lovely. So nice. And I want to start pulling in some of the questions that we're already getting, and please feel free to ask, and we'll do our best to get through as many as possible. But I can see one from Buddha B here that says, so on that theme of bringing this into your workplace, what is the best way to explain technology to people who are not immersed in it or exposed to it? So I think this person's thinking about people living in villages rather than cities and trying to explain a technology to them. You know, how would you bring the people into a situation like that?
Well, it was funny, when I came back from the trip, I had been out of like the Silicon Valley speak and the Cisco speak for a little while. And when I first came back to work, I felt there was a bubble over my head of the things that were coming out of my mouth that didn't seem natural, because I had been talking regular human talk with sailors and people for 2 years. And I was starting to get back into using acronyms and sort of like tech speak. And it was really foreign to me, you know, it felt weird. But I think we get so used to it that we don't realize we're doing it. And I think that's one of the key things, is that if you're talking to someone that doesn't have the same vernacular and colloquialisms as you, because you come from this subculture of working in the tech space, they're not going to be able to relate to your story. It has to be in their language. I think that's one of the things that I have been, that hit home really hard when I got back from the trip. And fortunately, at Cisco, there's a lot of talk about that. How do you can talk in more human language? And every time anyone writes something, we try to rate it to see what if it's in natural language or not. So that would be a big thing, is if put yourself in their shoes, going back to empathy, and would they understand what you're talking about? Or do you have to just, you know, explain it in a simpler way?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's when you're trying to explain something that's deeply technological, people who are not necessarily familiar with it.
It's human. Use cases, yeah. It's examples, yeah. It's not necessarily about the technology, it's what the technology can do for people. It's the experiences that they have, I think.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. There's another question here from Saeed K that is about, so that in a story, we have a big idea, but what happens when you need an elevator pitch? Literally, like, that short, that tight. Do you have any thoughts about how to hone an elevator pitch, either for a personal story or a business one?
That's a good question. I think it almost feels like you need to have that full story built out in order to distill down what that elevator pitch is. Otherwise, you might get lost. And sometimes it's in the form, like for me, I think it would be in the form of a question. Like, you know, what are you afraid of? Mm-hmm. You know, I was afraid of crossing the Atlantic, but I did it. If I can do that, what are you capable of? I mean, that's an example. I don't know.
Well done. Nice.
But I think you have to go through that process. I don't know if there's any shortcuts to getting to that elevator pitch. I think when we think of elevator pitches, we think, oh, I'm just going to take a small version. I'll just work on that small thing. But that small thing comes from the larger thing. So work on that larger story, then distill out what the elevator pitch is.
Yeah. And what I love in what you just shared is that you still kept the human story at the center, which I think is enormously difficult. That was going to be my personal question for you, is when you've got to crunch it down to 20 seconds, or we have people asking about six words. I don't know if you've read six word memoirs where people tell their entire life story in six words.
Oh, that would be fun to think about. I was telling you before that after I got back from the trip, I had been in the hospital briefly because they thought I had a brain tumor, and I'm fine. It was not at all. But there was a 3-hour moment when I thought maybe I was going to be dying from a brain tumor. And I thought, well, gosh, if I am, what would I tell my son? And I felt good about what I would be able to tell him, which is go live your life, realize your dreams, you know, don't, you know, find your passion in life. And come from a position of having done something like that, but like not a position of regret. Because I had offered to work at a company before I left on the trip, and I probably would be retired by now if I had taken that offer. But you know what? I had no regrets.
Yeah.
So it makes you think about what's the story of your life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know what my six words would be. I'd have, but that would be a fun thing to think about, but I know I'd be happy with it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's huge. It's absolutely huge. And I think one of the things that we see as people practice storytelling is that these, then they grow their capability and their confidence in them, is that it is something that it reflects on everything.
Yeah,
from your sense of purpose
yeah.
in life
yeah.
and how you center on that and talk about it. And it affects your work. And by the way, it's also good for work, but
it's also good for work.
So it is such a powerful thing to really reflect, take some time and edit down to like, what is that big idea? So coming back to that, I thought we'd answer a little poll. And so I think the voting was pretty solid, and the favorite, was it Sailors Make Plans in the Sand at Low Tide? No, I love that one. And I definitely have heard you talk about it. And I love that theme. But the big idea, clearly, in Jen's story is it's not about conquering your fears, but confronting them. I think that is just a lovely, human, vulnerable story that that everyone can connect to. So great
yeah,
work on
was.
That front.
And I don't feel like I'm an expert in storytelling. I feel that that I can get better if I'm exercising that muscle, but I am not, but I feel like I need to continue exercising that muscle. Like I've always, you know, one of the mindsets I'm trying to keep is that I need to always learn.
Yeah.
And that is included in storytelling. One of the lessons I talk about after coming back from the trip is that you as a person or me, we're never done. You know, I came back from the trip thinking, oh, I've learned all these great lessons, aren't I neat? But no, I still have a lot to learn. And I think that was through that discovery of that story was also that, I had more to learn even as a storyteller.
Yeah. And there's another question here from Jennifer about the kind of feedback that you're getting at work regarding your insights about courage. And I know you said to me once that you've become like a little mini inspirational speaker around Cisco.
I do go and speak at different groups at Cisco. I think that if people hear about the trip, they mainly think that it was a vacation.
Yeah.
And so I go out speaking to different groups and different all hands meetings because I enjoy doing it. And I feel like it hones my story. It gives me practice in doing it. But, and also dispel any myths that what we did was, sipping cocktails in our bathing suits for 2 years.
There was no sipping cocktails.
We did sip cocktails. I will say that. But it was after we'd done the hard work and we felt we'd earned every cocktail, I guess, we sipped.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So another question here from Mark about the thoughts on process for an organization to create their story. So when you're working with a team or a product, and so now you're thinking maybe a little bit more of your PR part of your life, what are the things that you learned in this process of going through this personally that come into hardcore business stories or an organization identifying its larger story?
One of the hardest things I find when I'm trying to talk about a story from, at a company, whether it's the company story or whether it's a product story is the people in the company who want to tell the story, but want it to be just about the product or just about the company and going through a process of talking with them about what a better story would be. That's almost harder than pitching stories. It's not as hard to come up with a story. It's about bringing the people, I think, along with you, because a lot of people want to say, oh, we're the greatest company in the world at this or that, and that's not necessarily what makes a good story. So bringing those people along, talking to them about what's a good story, finding those larger trends, I think that is the key. Don't focus on making sure the people around you know what a good story is and that you can come up with a broader story and get them comfortable with talking about, some of the not perfect things that your company has been through in order to make it a good story.
And how do you uncover, so one of the things we talk a lot about in design thinking and creative confidence is the confidence to diverge. You think you might have the story nailed.
Yeah.
You think it's pretty good, but then you need to actually blow it out, expand, look at all those things. And so what are some of the ways that you do that with a team or a group of people, or how do you encourage them to open
it?
It
was very similar to, I think, and this was one of the nice things about going through the storytelling course, is that getting that outside in view, always being that person who has that outside in view and being devil's advocate to talk about, like, well, you know, and getting people to remember that what they would think of as a good story is not actually what they're actually telling you they think is a good story for your company at that moment. So they can be saying, you can repeat it back to them too. You know, if you were to read this, would that be interesting to you? It's not even as interesting of a story. If I tell you where I went on 2-year sailing trip and how wonderful it was, then me telling you about how I was really scared and what I learned from that and how you might be able to relate to it, that's a more interesting story than the perfect one. And we often want to tell that perfect story for our companies, but it's not interesting.
Yeah. It's so, one of the most fun moments in the storytelling course that a lot of people love is we do this practice called the bar test or the bar exam, where we say, literally go, you can have tea, you can have coffee, you can have water if you want, but the idea is going into an environment that's not a business or work environment and just chatting your story to each other and then having the other person kind of play it back to you. And so I think that's what you're talking about is I'm going to play your story when you're coaching somebody else and you're telling them their story. You play back to them what it was that resonated or hit home or struck a chord for you. Yeah. And people are often surprised at what it is. Yeah. I think that's such a big aha that we see overall. There's another question from Aisha here about uncovering trends that work for a story as you're trying to figure out what that larger orbit and larger circle is.
It takes research, I think, you know, thinking about it, it takes research. It takes talking to other people. It takes, you know, what else is being written about out there? You know, what's, you know, research is coming up. It takes, you know, in PR, I will, you know, do some of that research myself or work with my PR agency to figure out what are those trends. And it's pretty common at PR agencies too, where they are like, they have trend watchers, like they're looking for things that are popping up. Those are the things that you want to, I think, hook onto.
Yeah. Yeah. And, when you were you researching backgrounds and trends for your sailing story, or were you just in touch with them? Because
I don't think I did as much research as I could for the sailing trip itself. Like we, for example, I would read about it, but I think I was so scared that I was also just like, I'm going to focus. But we had, I used to pick up this magazine called Ocean Navigator and then look at these people in Ocean Navigator and go, oh my God, they're amazing. And then they ended up profiling us in Ocean Navigator. And then I thought, instead of thinking I'm amazing, I thought maybe those other people weren't as amazing as I thought they were because we're in it, you know? Yeah. So it's everybody, you know, I don't necessarily think you need to elevate people, but since I've been back, I've gotten more into the sailing community, but I was trying to reach a broader audience than just the sailing community as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so interesting just hearing like how that when we're going after that big idea, a lot of people just think it's within them and they're going to know it when they hear it or they'll know it when they see it or they'll know it when they say it. But the fact is it's a lot of work. It's a lot of research. Yeah. It's a lot of spending time looking at things. And I think sometimes that's very natural for people. But if it's a topic that you're not comfortable with or a topic that you're not familiar with or some piece of technology or deeply technical process or medical process or government process that's thick with complexity, you really need to dig and pull these things apart to look at.
Yeah.
So I think we have time for about one or two more questions. People are sharing some pretty tough ones. I think there's ones that are a lot about the editing down process, which I've clearly become an expert at. But from Eric, he says, if you boil down the elements or the outline of a good story, what would it be?
I've thought a lot about that as we're going through the TED Talk, and I think that Nancy Duarte, and Duarte does a nice job of doing like the arc of a story, and you know I won't be able to explain it as good as her, but there's sort of, you know, like a way that stories, so you know, here's where we are, here's how it could be, here's where we are, here's how it could be, and she does a really nice job of talking through that and relating it back to, you know, sort of famous stories in our day, like of Star Wars and things like that. That's a really nice book to read if you haven't, if you aren't familiar with Nancy Duarte. For me, in the TEDx talk, I'll talk specifically about that. We my husband and I decided we wanted to get like these two themes across, and then talked about how that would look like as we're going through it, like what's going to have the most impact. You know, in the way that we tell the story. So we talked about what we did, put it in context, and then talked about what does it take to do something like that? And then went backwards from there. Well, we did this, but we're either, you know, extraordinary or, you know, or this was a vacation. So how do we dispel those rumors? So we put it out there up front and then work backwards from there. So it didn't actually align with Nancy Duarte's for that particular one. But I think lots of good ways to tell a story. For us, I guess we were thinking about who that particular audience is and what we wanted to get across. And the editing down was a huge part of that.
Yeah. So interesting. No, but I think that is a huge part of it, is that often in storytelling courses, we talk about the storytelling arc, and those are great tools and devices, but so often there's much more to it than that. The centering, the focusing, the editing process, the comfort with your audience.
And that's making up a story too, like in a lot of ways. We're going to make up a story where sometimes we're having to deal with reality. We're having to fit a real situation into that story. It doesn't always fit, but it's a nice framework.
Yeah. Okay, there's a great question here from Jaime in Chile. And he's asking, he'd like to know if you believe storytelling can help as a coaching tool to support teams across a project as they start across us. Do you see storytelling in that practice as like an emotional resource?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I haven't thought about that, but it's... Yeah, I think things always are more relatable when they're a story. You know, you hear this all the time, like people don't remember facts, but they remember stories. And like when you get trained to do a TED talk, they talk about how the audience's brain will start to work with yours and be in sync with yours as you're starting to tell a story. I mean, I think, you know, one way to actually be a better storyteller is be better at joke telling. I was historically a really terrible joke teller, and my husband was really good at it. And so we talk about, like, you know, this is the right way to, you know, you got to wait for the punchline. It can't be too long. You got to, you know, that's actually a good way. Jokes are mini stories. That's a terrific way to practice.
Yeah.
And you can bring humor into coaching teams too. But if you coach teams and talk about the story, like mentoring and coaching teams, a lot of it is motivation and talking about where you're going to be and where you are now, back to Nancy Duarte's storytelling. That'd be a great way to coach teams.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Last question. Carlos is asking, do you think there are some business areas where storytelling doesn't apply?
I don't. I think that storytelling applies for life, like even in telling jokes, even in like an analogy is a perfect little tiny story, right? Mm-hmm. And I had to argue just the other day about, I was trying to make a case for why we should wait on doing a certain press release, and I put it into an analogy, and everyone went, oh, yeah. And it made sense. And so I think that you can use little tiny stories or bigger stories in life everywhere. When you're parenting your kids, you know, if you talk about a certain, you know, I don't know, doing homework, you know, in a way that talks about it and from a storytelling perspective versus like, you need to do your homework. You know, I think storytelling can help in everything.
Yeah.
And it's good to practice.
Definitely. So I clearly would agree. Thank you, Carlos, for your question. Thank you, everyone, for joining us here today. And thank you most of all to Jen for your amazing adventures, but sharing them with us in a human way that helps us.
I enjoyed it. Thank you so much.